And God has designed it that we make some relations and connections, and unfortunately we can't connect with everybody and build those relations with everyone, but I enjoyed the people that I had a chance to spend a few moments with, and it was a blessing in that time. So I debated on two different messages, or three, and I told you that. And I'm going to give you just a little bit of the one and a little bit more of the other. The one message that I was thinking about went along with what Delbert had to say this evening, and that's why I thought I would just bring it up and mention it. And that was youth in life-changing decisions. Now, I don't know if you know, but there's this concept that every decision you make has an eternal consequence, let's say. And I'm just going to illustrate it real quick with a story that I used in that message. My dad had a neighbor it wasn't a neighbor, a total stranger, that was driving down the road past our neighbor's place, and a sycamore tree fell over on his car, crunched the car completely flat. He was nearly killed by a falling tree on just a windy day. And if he would have left the house 10 seconds before, or if he wouldn't have had to stop at that traffic light, or if he would have remembered to get up early enough in the morning that he wasn't late for work, or you can fill in the blank. Anything could have interrupted that by 2 seconds, and he would not have had his car smashed through. It dug down so far that it actually etched marks in the road where it blew out the tires, broke the wheels off the car, and there were ruts in the road where the drum or the brake, disc brakes, of course, we don't have drum brakes hardly anymore, but had dug a notch in the road. And if there would have been a passenger in the car, they would have been killed. So every second, every decision could potentially lead to an eternal consequence. And you were talking about the brevity of life. We don't know if we'd be the person in that car. But more importantly, the decisions we make of the friends that we hang out with, the occupation that we're involved in, and what kind of associates and bad language that they bring into our lives, and the choices that we make as far as just what we do. And you can stop and think about that. I just wanted to just give our youth something, because there are quite a few youth here. The reason I changed to the other message I was debating on, I don't know if very many of you know Tom Van Pelt. He was here this morning. He's been a friend of my dad's for a while. My mom happened to pass away in 2017, and it was rather sudden. She developed dermatomyositis. You want a long word to learn? Go look that up. But anyway, she went from being perfectly healthy to gone in 1 month's time. And one morning, a Valentine's Day, she went to the emergency room and spent a few days at the local hospital, and then they transferred her to Hershey. And one morning they said, okay, we're putting her on a ventilator. And my dad did not have a last chance to have a conversation with her. And that has frustrated him, I think, to this very day. And I don't blame him. But he got to be friends with Tom because Tom lost his wife. And I said, you know what? Marriage is a treasured thing. And it is something that we take for granted until it's gone. And probably my dad would do better at preaching this message, but he's not a preacher and he's not here this evening, so I will do this. But we take our companions for granted too often, and too many times we just think, well, you know what, we have more time to get things. We can say we're sorry tomorrow, or we can say, and let's just get into some of these things. But so it seems in the world it's very popular to say, so I've titled the message this evening, Godly Romance. It's very popular in the world to say, oh, my old man says that I can't do this, or the old woman won't let me do this, or my husband would kill me if I bought that, or they make jokes about each other and put each other in a negative light. It's very popular to do. It's like, well, my wife would, and you blame the other person. And they're just ruining a God-given thing. So godly romance. Romance is a feeling of excitement, of mystery. And we see that the Bible talks about that mystery that's in romance, that's associated with love. And we see that in Ephesians 5:32, where it says, this is a great mystery. So it's a type of Christ in the church, and Christ in the church are supposed to have good things. And we're not saying Christ is my old man and he won't let me do this. We don't use those kind of terms. We don't do those things. But in most of our minds, when we say the word romance, we think that, life is going to be this fairy tale, and we find this Mr. Wonderful, and we get married to him, or Miss Wonderful, if you're on this side of the house. You're going to find this lovely lady somewhere out there, and she's just going to make you happy, and you're going to live happily ever after, and everything's positive. You're never going to have a disagreement. Everything's going to go smoothly. But we know that that's not quite the truth. We want to use Ruth and Boaz as just a little bit of an example tonight of romance and a few lessons that we can learn from that, and then just get down into the weeds of practical life. So, a few lessons from Ruth and Boaz. Let's start in Ruth 1, verse 16. So, we see here, we all know the story of Ruth and Boaz, and I want to keep it fairly short tonight. So, we're not going to go through and read every detail of this story. Ruth had some commitment in her life. She was committed to godly living. She said, "Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. Where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God." Now, I've heard people that get engaged, and that's what the girl says when she says yes. That's what she tells her companion. And maybe that's happened to you here. I don't know. But that's a wonderful commitment. That's almost, could almost be a wedding vow right there. We could rewrite them and maybe put that in somehow. But it's a wonderful commitment. But that wasn't to her husband. That wasn't to Boaz. She was committed. She saw something in God's people, something that was different than what the people around her were doing. And she said, "You know what? You have something that is special, something that is going to last." And we see that godly commitment in Ruth. And then we see that godly commitment in Boaz. And we see a few things there. I'm just going to pull out one thing. And that was that he saw this widow lady. It wasn't love at first sight. Well, it sort of was. He kind of helped her out there if you stop and think about it. But he was interested in helping this. Okay, so Naomi came back. I'm going to make sure she gets plenty of grain and drop some handfuls on purpose. But he also blessed his reapers there in verse 4 of chapter 2. He was a godly man. Boaz had a good relationship with his employees, which godly men should have good relationships with the people they hire. He said, "The Lord be with you." And they answered him, "The Lord bless thee." They had this good thing going on. He was a godly man, and that puts both of these people in a good position to have success in their commitment to each other. Number two, we see God arranging these circumstances in chapter 2, verse 3 and verse 20. It says, "She went and came and gleaned in the field of the reapers, and her hap," the circumstance, "just worked out." And sometimes that is the way it is. Our relationships happen. We went to Bible school with this person. We just happened to go to New York for Jesus. I just happened to notice Krista Hurst one day. Just happened. We happened to go to the same church, which makes it a little easier. So her hap was to light on the part of the field that belonged to Boaz, who was of kindred of Elimelech. So he had some relation and some connections there. God was arranging these circumstances. And then we see it down in verse 20. "And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Blessed be he of the Lord, who hath not left off his kindness to the living and to the dead." And Naomi said, "The man is of near kin unto one of us, to us, one of our next kinsmen." So she was seeing this weaving together. Something was happening here that was a good thing. And God is arranging our relationships. If we're going at it selfishly, we may not see that quite as much. And maybe we will afterward. God works through different means and circumstances. You may not meet up with your Cinderella or whatever you want to put in there, this wonderful person, just by some God-leading thing. Number three, godly adults take dating advice from others is what I titled this one. Chapter 3, verse 1 says, "Naomi and her mother-in-law said unto her, My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" Her mother-in-law was interested in what was happening here. And we go down to chapter 4, verse 4. And in here we see, this is working on the side of Boaz. So people are working on both sides to make this all come together here. And he said, "I thought it to advertise thee, saying, Buy it before the inhabitants, before the elders of the people, and if thou wilt redeem it, redeem it. But if thou wilt not redeem it, then tell me that I may know, for there is none to redeem it beside thee, and I am after thee." And he said, "I will redeem it." And then he had this whole thing, well, if you're redeeming that, then you have this lady and that comes in. It's a weird circumstance that we're not familiar with. But we see that they were working with the circumstances they were given. They were following the customs, the guidelines. They weren't doing some little secret thing out to the side. And we see this little thing of her going to lay at the feet of Boaz as being some weird little thing going on. And you can kind of say whatever you want with that. But Naomi telling Ruth to go do this, there was, in my research a little bit of this, I think it was more of the concept of saying, I am totally respect, I totally submit to whatever you tell me to do, is if this is going to work out or if it isn't, I'm here to listen and I'm here to take whatever you tell me. And being at his feet meant I'm totally, makes me think of a little story. Maybe I'll save that. It's unnecessary. But a man in the, was bowing down to my feet one day asking, and but in the other cultures, that's a thing. Please, sir, I need this. Could you help me out? It's that surrender of saying, hey, I'm at your mercy, whatever you do here. So they were taking advice from others. They were submitting to each other. Number four, godly youth should be looking for someone virtuous. You should be looking for someone that's good and strong and capable in faithful in faith, I would say. They don't need to be the strongest, the best looking, the best whatever, but they need to have some qualities. You cannot, well, I'll just say what I'm thinking. You can't marry a loser and expect it to work out. That's pretty blunt. But you need to be looking for someone that has some good qualities, that has some capabilities, that has maybe a godly work ethic. And we see here how she worked and she was diligent. She was out in the field, applied herself. She rested a little while. And we can apply those things in different ways. But it talks about how these things, when we're looking for a companion here, what's it say here in chapter 3, verse 11? My daughter, fear not, I will do all that thou requirest, for the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. She had a good reputation. It wasn't a questionable character. He was willing to accept his responsibility. And then we have verses like Proverbs 12, verse 4, that a godly woman is a crown to her husband. She's just somebody that you say, wow, I am so privileged to be married to that lady back there. That's my wife, and I'm happy about that. And we talk about in Proverbs 31 that her price is far above rubies. There's nothing, if there's anything that I would give up my religion for, it would be my wife, which it sounds really bad, but you get my point, okay? So I don't care about whether I own a farm or a house or a vehicle or whatever. I would give anything, and my wife and my dad would tell you the same thing. If he could have given every dollar to keep my mom alive, that couple hundred thousand dollars that hospital stay cost was nothing if she would have come back. But to pay it when she's not there is a little different. It's a little tougher. But anyway, but no, I hope that I would put Christ ahead of, and Christ should be number one. But I'm just saying that to prove a point. You get what I'm saying. And we see here that Boaz, he kind of did a little background check. What is this lady? Where did she come from? What's she doing here? And he noticed her diligence, and he said, I thought it was interesting here in verse 10. This is advice to the young ladies, and I know this is hard, but he said, blessed be thou, the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast shown more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch as thou followest not the young men, whether poor or rich. She wasn't flirting with the young men that were out there in the field and trying to get their attention and, hey, look at me and what I'm up to over here and whatever. She was just going about her thing, and a godly man took notice. And then we see how he took the proper steps. We don't hardly have time to go across some of those things. he took the proper steps, and maybe we could just skim down through a couple verses here in chapter 4. How he went and went through the whole process, and the people blessed him. And Boaz said unto the elders of all the people, we'll just jump down to verse 9. You are witnesses this day So that he did it this publicly. I bought all that's Mahlon's and Chilion's at the hand of Naaman. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Mahlon, have I purchased to be my wife, to raise up the name of the dead upon his inheritance, that the name of the dead be not cut off from among his brethren. And all the people at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel. And do thou worthily in Ephrath, and be famous in Bethlehem, and let thy house be like the house of Pharaohs, who Tamar bare unto Judah the seed. The Lord shall give you this young woman. So they were blessing this marriage. He was doing this, taking the proper steps, and people were able to put their blessing on it. And I know this doesn't maybe fit with this, but he went through and had a godly courtship, if you want to call it. A hands-off policy is a safe policy, and you've heard this before. But I've told some young girls that have worked for me, I've hired quite a few young girls over the years, and I've just said, a man that does not respect you, and this does not maybe fit with a godly romance, but maybe it does. A young man that does not respect you enough to keep his hands off of you when he is dating is in a terrible position when stress comes in a marriage, that he is going to turn to something he can find on his phone or some woman down the street that will tell him how wonderful he is. And things are going to go south. I've seen it happen so many times. Yes, there are people that repent, and their courtship didn't turn out right, and they got in deeper than they thought. But there are many marriages that have been wrecked by people that sensuality was the only thing in the dating relationship, and they weren't committed to a godly courtship. So... In fact, you see this here. They're like, hey, don't let anyone see that I'm here in the dark by ourselves. This is going to look suspicious to people. So the physical, the touch, the feel, and all this stuff, it should not be the main focus. It's like, that is a bad way to start a marriage. Marriage is supposed to be a little bit of heaven on earth. Now let's move into some of the things. As we mentioned, a type of Christ in this church. And we see in Revelation 21, verses 2 and verse 9, where it says that New Jerusalem coming down as a bride adorned for her husband, this beautiful relationship of Christ and his church being one and enjoying that love and that connection with each other. And we have a verse in John 14, verse 3, that Jesus said, I'm going to prepare a place for you, and I'm going to build this wonderful place, and I'm going to come, and I'm going to receive you to myself. And for the people back then, they understood this whole thing because, as you know, if you study Bible stories at all, they had this engagement, and then the man went away and got his house prepared, and then one day, without warning, he shows up, and it's the exciting day that this bride was looking for all this time. And he came to receive her unto himself. And so we see that marriage relationship that Jesus is even talking. I think he's thinking about that wedding day and what that's going to be like. The church that he sacrificed his blood and sweat and tears and nights of sleep that he gave up. All this stuff for a happy marriage. And we are supposed to reflect some of that. Well, the Bible says that most men should marry. And I get that from Genesis 2 verse 18. This is a topical message if you haven't figured that out by now. The Lord said, it is not good that man should be alone. Most men should get married. That's what the Bible says. It's not good for a man to be alone. I will make an help meet for him. So, and then we see down here in Genesis 2, verse 21 and 24. Well, 21 to 24. I'll just read these verses because this is where we get the basis of marriage. This is what God said. And the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam. This is Genesis 2, verse 21 to 24. And he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh instead thereof. And the rib which the Lord God had taken from man made he a woman and brought her unto the man. And Adam said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Therefore, shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. So this is where the marriage thing started. This is one flesh, people united together, living together, and sharing life together, and having that social close bond that is nowhere else on earth that you're going to have that close of a relationship. And we have the verse in Proverbs 18:22 that says that, I believe it's 18:22 that says, I just wrote down this, marriage has God's blessing. And I think it's the one that says, he that marrieth a wife, whoso findeth a wife findeth a good thing and obtaineth favor of the Lord, I think is the end of that verse. I did not have time. We went to the viewing this afternoon. So if I sound a little bit scattered, it's because I didn't have time to look up these verses and get them all locked away for this evening. But marriage brings this intended fulfillment that God promised, and he says that you're supposed to rejoice in the wife of your youth. It says in Proverbs 5, verse 18, and it's to keep you from sin. You have all these temptations of the wicked world around you, the evils of all the sensuality and all the immodesty and all the things that are happening in the world. Rejoice in the wife of your youth and find your happiness and joy in that relationship. And then I have written down Ecclesiastes 9, verse 9, and I should have looked this one up. If somebody finds it before me, just feel free to read it out. I do not know what it says. I just wrote down joyfully. That's the only word I have in my notes. 9 verse 9 says, live joyfully with the wife whom thou lovest all the days of the life of thy vanity. We live a vain life. We just go to work and go to bed and do our thing, and it's all going to be burnt up, and we're not going to take any of it with us, but we need some money to live, right? So it's all vanity, which he hath given thee under the sun. So enjoy your marriage, whatever you're doing, how much stress and work and whatever. It's a little reprieve from that, maybe. The days of vanity, for that which is thy portion is in this life and in thy labor, which thou takest under the sun. So rejoice and find joy in your marriage. Well, we know that sin is what really has stressed out marriages. We have this perfect marriage. Adam and Eve were there together. They were naked. They were not ashamed. It was a wonderful time. And then Genesis 3 comes along and Satan says, hey, you need something else here. You got a good husband. You have every tree. You have 10,000 trees, whatever it was there in the garden. But there's one right here and you need it yet. And sin just came and ruined everything. And the woman you gave me, it started right then and there. They bit the apple and it was, well, it's the woman's fault. It's the man's fault. If you wouldn't have done this, and I imagine they went to bed for a little while having it out. Like, if you would have showed me that apple. And you think about all these little things. They get in these arguments and they had this, things just happen. And of course, we see Cain and Abel and their relationship, and the flood happened, and Sodom and Gomorrah, we talked a little bit about this morning, and Lot and his wife and daughters are just terribly mixed up. Not a good marriage, not a good relationship. And God's people were struggling. Abraham and Sarah and Hagar got all mixed up, and that was a mess. And we see how the marriage relationship wasn't what God intended there. And we see Isaac and Esau and how they just had issues with their marriages and their wives. And Rebecca and Jacob kind of had a thing, they were favoring. So Isaac liked Esau and Rebecca liked Jacob, and they had this whole thing going on. They had played favorites with their children, and you can look at Jacob and Leah and Rachel. Leah was not the one he liked, and he ended up and just a mess. Thankfully, we don't have some of those things, but we do have things in our lives. We don't have multiple wives and all that, but we do have bills, and we have differences of opinion, and we have parenting issues that we run into, and stuff just slowly drains the romance that you thought was going to be happily ever after on the wedding day, and it was just a wonderful time, and it's gone. It's like a tire that has a nail in it. I had one of those the other day. Drove up to Lancaster for a show to sell some chairs, and I looked, 24 pound of air in the tire, which you probably could run for a while like that, but I'm not. I just put a new set on. I didn't want to ruin them. I pulled in the gas station, put a little air in it, and it lasted me for a little while. I got there, I start coming home, like, I'm going to have to stop at the gas station again. And I happened to look on the tread. It was right there. I went home and plugged it, and it was fine. But it just slowly, slowly leaks down. Somehow we need to pump this back up and find that romance that we thought we had when we got married. And then some children come along, and we have a mortgage and we have things to do, and suddenly it's not all glamorous and wonderful anymore, and we have our first fight. And how does that go? Well, first of all, I don't have all the answers. Second, I have made plenty of mistakes. But I will say, I talked about my mom passing. My parents were happily married for 37 years. They gave me a very good example. And we do have a good, godly marriage. But we've had some ups and downs. I've been through some things. But I just think about, we have all these things. We go to these, there's marriage seminars. Oh, we're going to go for a retreat to Penn Valley. We're going to learn how to, and we have these people that are just, and I the more and more, I guess maybe because of my where I'm at in life and the older I get, we just see many Christians that are essentially cohabitating. They don't really love each other anymore, and it's just they're having stress. And even in good marriages, the devil's trying to just jab you with something that just kind of punctures that tire and flattens it out and makes it take some of the joy out of it. Well, the short answer, in my experience for fixing marriages, if you want one sentence or something to write down, the short answer is selfishness must die. Crucify it, kill it, put Roundup on it, whatever you need, and get it out of your life, because love is sacrifice. Sacrifice is love, whichever way you want to write that equation. And sacrifice brings joy. And I don't know, you've probably experienced this a little bit in your life. Did you ever go to a homeless shelter and you see all those people that have needs and issues? Or you went on a CAM project where somebody's house burnt down or there was a flood or whatever, and you did a cleanup and you served those people, and there's something that made you feel really warm and fuzzy inside when they came back and they were excited about the meal you served them. Thank you so much for coming. That chicken corn noodle soup we serve every fifth Saturday night at Rescue Mission, that was so delicious. We loved it. And you would have a conversation about God with them, and you would go home feeling like you made a difference in that person's life. There's something about giving up of your time, giving up of your energy for the sake of your wife, for the sake of your children, that will do something good in your heart. That's the short version. So, but then there are two other things that I want to hone in on here a little bit. And then we're going to just go down through a couple quick practical points. But another thing that I find, at least in my relationship, is good communication. If you say, well, I thought you were going to, or I didn't you hear me? What? How did you miss it? You were supposed to pick up milk on the way home at the grocery store. You stopped at the gas station anyway. And if you would have just listened and communicated better, and yes, I remember you told me that. Good communication, and then just have loving affection in your marriage. Just a couple of points here. These are maybe revealing too many things about our marriage, but my wife will tell me later. I've preached this message before, and I think it was okay. So, but I'm going to just go into a couple things that have worked for us. Not that we have the perfect marriage. I've already covered that. And I don't want to make it sound like that I have all the answers, because the Bible has the answers and we've gone through the Bible, but we're not going to hit very many verses after this. So if you want to zip up your Bible and just listen, that's fine. But point number one, worship together. And we went across this. Have God at the center of your life. This is something, we've had some ups and downs in our marriage, but one of the things that has been a huge blessing that we've changed here a few years ago, and I've recommended this to everyone, we have about 10, 15 minutes, and maybe we should get out and kneel beside our bed and we would be blessed even more, but we just cuddle up in bed for 10 or 15 minutes before we get out in the morning. One morning it's my turn to pray, and we pray for all the needs that are on our heart. It could be our children, it could be our church, it could be our work situation, it could be someone in a foreign country, it could be the Faust family, it could be whatever, but we just spend a nice period of time just praying together and having that time of sharing with God and hearing the other person's heart and what's on their heart and what inspired them to pray in the morning. But then we can discuss spiritual things and the inspiration that we receive from our devotionals or different scriptures or something that stood out to us, or maybe a message that I listened to when I was driving to my next sales appointment or whatever. And of course, we share some things. We impart some of this spiritual life to our families and in their lives, and have family worship. And we go across these things quite often. But number two I put down is make time to listen. Maybe it's because I do plenty of talking, as you all figured out. But every once in a while, believe it or not, I stop and listen to what my wife has to say. And I think she values that time, and I do too. Because life gets busy, and I'm going here, I've got a trustee meeting tonight, and then I'm going to help the trustees repair the back door tomorrow night, and then the next night we have prayer meeting, and the night after that, well, I've got some other meeting or something to go to, and the night after that, well, we generally go see one of the grandparents on Friday nights, and the night after that, well, our children are all home, and we visit with them, and we go to bed, and we have not communicated very well. And most of you know what this is like. We get busy doing our own thing and we're caught up on the next thing and we don't listen. And she might have a little situation. Hey, I want you to tell me what to do. I've got, our son is just picking and fighting with his sister and he's doing this. And what am I supposed to do? Do you have some jobs to keep him out of trouble? What should I do tomorrow? You're going to be gone. What? And we listen and we hear things and we learn things and we come up with solutions together. Sometimes we, when they're young, it's pretty easy. You can just say, go to bed, get in bed, and then we can talk. As you have teenagers, you know you need to figure out some other times throughout the day because they stay up till midnight too. So there's that. But I ran across this little saying. This was clear back on our wedding trip. There was a saying on the side of a truck, and it said that women are like phones. They like to be held and talked to. Push the wrong button and you'll be disconnected. Just an interesting little quote. There's some truth to it. And I guess that was on our wedding trip, and I didn't realize how much truth was to that. But just make sure you don't hit the wrong button, and you'll hear a lot of things, and you'll learn a lot of things, and you'll be building that relationship with each other. And you can ask advice from your wife, and how could I have done better in disciplining a child, or what should I do here, and what about my work? What do you think? Our wives are much smarter than us. Well, I'll just speak for myself here. But she's already thought it through and thought of some ideas and some options, and I was like, you know what? I probably should change that. And maybe she has a recommendation, something that's annoying that I do, or whatever. But our strengths and weaknesses balance each other out. So I'm generally a little firmer, like, hey, you need to straighten up, or I'm going to rattle your head a little bit here, a little bit. So, and she'd be like, hey, you know what? They haven't had much sleep. We got home late from Cornerstone. And yeah. So, but we balance each other out. And so being too harsh or too lenient, and somebody, maybe I'm too blunt, or maybe she's not necessarily blunt enough or something. But, and we have that verse from Ecclesiastes 4, verse 9 and 10 that says, two are better than one, for when one falls, there's another one to help lift him up. And when, and that can even be just emotionally. One of us is just down in the dumps, and we've had a rough week, and we come home, and wife's like, oh, it's not so bad. You're going to be fine. Don't worry about that guy. He was grumpy, and he just told you off because... and all those things can kind of lift you up. And then she's down and blue, and what am I doing about this? My garden's looking like it's dying. We're not going to have anything to eat this fall. Our green beans aren't doing so well right the minute, and this is some real life things. But anyway, and I just put in here, the next thing is to kind of, in our communication, one of the things that I have learned is to say thank you, I love you, you're beautiful. Build each other up. Your wife is beautiful to you. Or if you should have chosen someone different if she isn't. I can't fix that for you now. But you get what I'm saying. Tell her that you love her. And I changed this a little while back in my life. I wasn't doing that often enough. Now I probably, I don't think you can ever do it, but I tell her that 10 times a day or more probably. You'd have to ask her, but most days I do. And it's a wonderful thing because we say it to each other pretty often. And it's true. So love, and let's back up here a little bit. I think I missed this. Maybe I found this down here somewhere else, and I'll probably repeat it because, like I said, I didn't read through this. But love is more than just this warm, fuzzy feeling. Love is a commitment to say, I have committed to this relationship. I am here. I'm going to keep with this woman. This is the woman I chose. And yes, there might be somebody else out there that is a nice person too. But this is my wife, and she is beautiful, and I love her. And I appreciate what she does in my life. and love is a commitment. Sometimes we feel a little more romantic than other times. And sometimes we're just feeling moody and grumpy and whatever. But we need to say, I love you, even sometimes when maybe you just don't feel quite that way. Maybe you just had a little falling out with each other over something. And you just say, you know what? I love you. And it's, yeah, just do it. So keep it fun. Keep the romance in your marriage, keep it fun. We have little code words for different things, funny little things that have happened, little terms that come up, some inside jokes that nobody else knows, things that happen on our wedding trip, things that happen in our dating relationship. Little stories, little goofy things, and we bring them up and laugh about them. And we have these little fond memories, and they're just a secret. They're just for you and your wife. Nobody else in this congregation, none of my children, they don't know these little things, but we have something special, something funny that happened, and we'll laugh about it once in a while. And just keep things fun. Find time to work and shop together is number four, if you're numbering these off. And that is just working and shopping together. I did not go dress fabric shopping the last time with my wife, but sometimes I do. It's not my favorite thing to do, but I kind of like to pick out some fabrics that look good to me instead of just what may look good to her sometimes. But we spend time, or we help pick peas, or we do sweet corn together, or we... Our husband's going to the auto parts store and to pick up something, and you go and say, hey, I'll ride along with you. I'm going to Lowe's to pick up more stuff. I go there way too often. But yeah, I'm going for more stuff. And my wife said, hey, would you like me to ride along? Absolutely. The answer is always yes. Yeah, I would love. Sometimes you need to be with the children. I get it. But spend time to do things together. Maybe it's just handing him the tools when he's working on a vehicle. That happens occasionally for us. But this whole thing, and I really want to push back hard on this. I see so many young married people like, we're going to have a girls' weekend, and they're married, and they're going out to spend time at the beach with their six friends that they made friends with at wherever, and their husband's sitting at home taking care of the two little children. And I'm like, how is that building your relationship? Or the guy goes out on a week-long hunting trip, and maybe he takes a brother or his dad along, and they go, and they're having some good old times, and the wife is home changing the diapers and the baby's crying and has a cold and fussy and whatever. And she's trying to put these three children to bed and they're out having a grand. Yeah, if that works for you, I guess come tell me. But I don't think it has built up any Christian marriages to go on separate vacations. Especially if it's an overnight thing. Maybe you want to go hang out and have a coffee with your friends. Go do it. Have fun. But, and sometimes those things can be healthy. I shouldn't be so harsh on y'all. I don't know how many of you do that. But then we see the verse, and this kind of ties in with it. We have the verse in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 5, that says, not to defraud one another. You are supposed to have this relationship. This is you have signed a contract to treat each other with love and respect. And you can go read that verse and figure out what that means for yourself. But being unavailable to support your companion is not a good solution for a happy marriage. And this was written, just so you know, this was written by Paul. He was a bachelor. What did he know about marriage? But somehow he had some insight here and saw what worked. And do some things, spending time together. in this is do some things that you're with your wife and your children that they enjoy. Yeah, you would love to go out and whatever, run your four-wheeler around in the woods or whatever is fun for you. That's great. But maybe take your children or your wife along with you. Or maybe they would like to go down by the lake or whatever it is. They would like to go on a little picnic. Take the time and say, hey, we're going to do something. Remember, sacrifice is love, and love builds happiness, and it all works together. Number five, do something special for each other. So my wife does really well at this. She'll make something that she knows that I really, really like. And there's a couple things that fit in that category. Or maybe I'll do something special for her and say, hey, we're ordering pizza tonight. You don't have to cook supper. You've had a busy week. You've had a lot of things going. Can I just order pizza for you? And we'll surprise them with a little bit of something. Just a little surprise. Just maybe it's just getting something off the honey-do list. You know that there's a screen door that don't close quite right, or you know that there's a leaky faucet at her kitchen sink, or you know whatever it is. Just surprise her and get that little job fixed up maybe when she was out shopping or something. Or just a little gift, whatever it is. There's different ways that you can show something special just to kind of say, hey, I thought about you. And yeah. Number six, be quick to say I'm sorry and to forgive each other. So I ran across this quote. This is another quote that I really, really like. And that is, holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. Think about that one once. When you're angry, the only person that you're hurting is yourself. Yeah, maybe you're making the other person feel sad. But holding on to anger is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die. You're only ruining it for yourself. Get it out of the way and say, you know what? I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry. I was wrong. Well, I didn't go across this. There was one little thing that I had in my notes up here that I forgot to mention. About 2 years, 3 years ago, one of our employees was getting married, and the employee's boyfriend was there for a little goodbye party that we had at our store. And some of our customers that were in the sewing world, we got to be close with customers that routinely come in. So they were there. And he told this boy, he said, there are three sentences that you need to know. Number one, I am sorry. Number two, it's my fault. And number three, how can I make it up to you? Well, that's worldly advice. But there's some truth to that. Just say, I'm sorry, it's my fault. Take ownership of what you did wrong, and then get it taken care of. So, and many times, it's over petty little things. If you stop and think about, person has said, if you want to stop and analyze something that you're angry about or something that you're really bothered about, if it's going to matter 10 years from now, then you should probably be upset about it. A little bit like the church headed for destruction in the salt mine that we talked about this morning. But if it's little stuff and like, hey, you kind of embarrassed me there and you wounded my pride because you told that goofy little story about me stumbling and falling on the step out in front of church last Sunday or whatever, and it just made me a little bit angry that you told that story. Yeah, we just should say, I'm going to leave it go. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said it. Just using some hypothetical. But so don't be miserable in life and hold a bunch of grudges. Number seven, hugs, kisses, affection. The Bible talks about this, rejoicing in the wife of your youth. And you see Song of Solomon, you can read that whole story, talks about how you're to build that relationship. And when one person's like, well, She didn't feel like answering the door, and she wished she would have, but that affection in the relationship. And I've just almost never leave my house, even if it's for 10 minutes down the road, to go somewhere without giving my wife a little hug and a kiss before I leave. And you might say, well, that's an extreme, and maybe it is, but because of my parents' relationship, that sudden, you don't get that back. You never get that last, like, well, at least I had that. You just don't know. So you treasure those moments. And I guess because I lost my mom, and that hurt pretty bad to me, and I saw how much it hurt my dad. And they had a great relationship, but he just said, you know, spend time and enjoy it. You never know when it'll be over, which kind of goes back to Delbert's devotions. And I just want to say here in closing, there's going to be mistakes. There's going to be trials. There's going to be stresses. It's part of living in a fallen world. Your marriage is normal. I remember the first time we had an argument. This was like, oh, I don't know, 6 months into our marriage, 3 months. I don't remember when it was. But it was over something. It was so foolish. If I told you, it's just embarrassing. And I thought, wow, is this the way life's going to be after this? I mean, are we going to just constantly, why are you? But we're going to make mistakes. There's going to be things that happen. But you need to make the choice to say, am I going to let the devil ruin something? Or am I going to work at this and I'm going to treasure every moment, love my wife, tell her how much I love her, be unselfish, and experience a little bit of heaven on earth? Let's kneel for prayer.